All right, Alexander, let's talk about Biden's phone call with Xi. And we have a lot of news coming out of China, actually. Man, China is on the move. The U.S. looks like it's, for lack of a better word, I just don't have another word other than retreat. I don't know if that's the right word. Is that the right word I can use? What's going on here with the U.S. and China, with Biden's phone call with Xi and China's movements? It's very active. China is active right now.
Like I have never seen China be at any time since the death of Mao Zedong, to be straightforward about this. And I mean, I'm not making comparisons between Mao's foreign policies and China's today. I mean, they're very different, but the same level of activity. I mean, Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister, is currently in Singapore. He's just been to Vietnam. He's going exactly to the places where Kamala Harris was just a few weeks ago on that disastrous trip, and he's scooping up all the you know assets. He's piling in all the chips that you know she managed to scatter all over the place. And Xi Jinping is off to Dushanbe in a few weeks. Actually next week, where he's going to meet Putin, and they're making a big pitch. The Chinese are moving in Central Asia and all sorts of things. Anyway, but the Chinese are incredibly active, and they're very, very purposeful. The United States is all over the place. And what's happening at the moment is really extraordinary. And for those of us who have a genuine regard for the United States, it's also, I have to say this, in some ways it's sad to watch, because clearly some people in Washington now were beginning to get worried that things weren't really working out with China, that the Chinese were making all these big moves, that the United States wasn't really organized to rebut them, that they were worried about the situation in Taiwan spinning out of control. They were worried about the fact that the Chinese threatened an American warship in the South China Sea. They apparently basically told that warship, you know, if you stay too close to our bases, then, you know, we're prepared to open fire, and the ship turned away. They're worried about that. So they got the old man in the old Oval Office to telephone Xi Jinping. And he had a telephone conversation, and it was not an easy conversation from what you can judge from the readouts. But apparently Biden said, you know, well, we want peace. We want to avoid conflict. We're not looking for a showdown with you over Taiwan. And then at the very same time that the president was on the phone to Xi Jinping, reassuring the Chinese about that, you then start getting all the usual people, the anonymous sources, in other words, the neocons at the National Security Council and the State Department, and they're busy briefing the media, briefing the Financial Times, that the United States is about to convert Taiwan's mission in the United States to a Taiwan representative office, in other words, in effect, an embassy, and is going to take a big step towards recognizing Taiwan as an independent country, something which is completely unacceptable to Beijing. So you see the old man telephoning Xi Jinping, trying to talk peace, and the hardliners in the National Security Council at the same time acting to undermine that and preparing for war and taking steps that could provoke a war. And in the meantime, the vice president makes a mess in places like Singapore and Vietnam, which is now aligning more closely with China. And the Chinese are becoming more threatening and more active. And they're now talking about sending their fighter jets to fly over Taiwan itself. And I have to say this, I think if this continues for much longer, with one part of the administration saying one thing and another part of the administration saying something different, then all the regional powers will follow the example of Vietnam and will align with China against the US. I think it's only a question of time now. I think already we see that in the Philippines. There's already moves to that effect in the Philippines, and Indonesia will follow. So it's not perhaps so much a retreat as a collapse of the American position in the Pacific. And, you know, we are heading there because there is no purposeful policy. No one in Washington can agree on a policy. The Chinese are making all the moves. They're making all the big decisions. They're moving forward their military. They're threatening to overfly Taiwan. And the United States cannot decide which policy it's going to follow.
Yeah, would it be correct to say that the neocons are demanding some sort of action anywhere in the world, but say they're focusing in on Taiwan for now because of the Afghanistan debacle? So the neocons aren't so much telling the Biden White House to do something. They may be demanding it after Afghanistan. That's the one point. But the Biden White House, they seem to be half-assing it in Southeast Asia. You know what I mean?
Well,
they're not really committed to taking on China. And
no.
It sounds to me, listening to your video that you did on your channel with the phone call between Biden and Xi, that Biden's kind of like, he's fine with taking orders from Xi or accommodating. I don't want to say accommodate, just kind of like, you know, okay, China, do whatever you guys want. We'll kind of do our thing, but we're not going to step on your toes. It sounds, you know, after listening to your video, that's what it kind of sounded like from Biden, that they're not so committed to take on China in that region.
Absolutely. Look at it from China's point of view. Look at it from Xi's point of view. He has the president of the United States coming along and talking to him in this kind of way. He hears, he's able to read what's in the Financial Times and other places where the neocons are talking. And bear in mind, Xi Jinping is certainly briefed by his officials about things like that. So he's perfectly well aware of that. So what does he see? He sees weakness and division. He hears all this tough talk from the neocons, but he also knows that the president is scared, because that's the impression he's going to get. The president gets out of the way to tell him that the United States does not want a conflict in the Pacific region. So from Xi Jinping's position, from his perspective, it looks as if at this moment in time, the United States is, as we say in Britain, all hat but no trousers. In other words, it's bluffing. And the one thing you should never do with a country like China, certainly not with China, is you should never bluff China, because sooner or later, your bluff is going to be called. And you're absolutely right. The neocons at this moment in time, they're enraged about the debacle in Afghanistan. They're furious because their Central Asian policy has collapsed to dust. They're blaming the administration for that. They were a key part of the constituency, the coalition of people and interests that got Biden into the White House. So they're, of course, pushing pressure. They're saying, we are not happy. We are absolutely furious. In fact, we are insisting that there has to be a confrontation somewhere. So we want a confrontation perhaps with Iran in the Gulf. But ultimately, the big one is China in the Pacific, and we see that confrontation. So the risk is that on the one hand, the Chinese are seeing weakness and disunity, and that's going to encourage them to press on harder. And at the same time, on the other hand, the administration is coming under pressure from the neocons. So in a showdown, which its own show of weakness may be creating, it finds itself that it can't realistically back down. It's the worst possible position to be in. The best position to be in always is to be in a strong, consistent position, a realistic position, right from the start, to negotiate with the Chinese toughly, making clear what your red lines are and sticking to them. And at the same time, setting those red lines in a realistic way, one which mirrors American interests. Now, I know some people in our videos get annoyed when I say it, but that was the line that Donald Trump followed in the first 2 years of his administration. When Bolton and Pompeo came in, the neocons came in, well, it began to change. But that was the correct way of handling the Chinese. The Chinese knew it. They respected him. Xi Jinping liked him, because they like consistency and strength. What they're seeing instead now is division and weakness, and that is both a temptation to the Chinese and a tremendous risk.
Okay, you talked about some of the countries of Southeast Asia and the foreign minister of China kind of scooping them up. What's going on? Can you touch briefly about what's going on, say, with Japan, with South Korea? North Korea fired long-range cruise missiles the other day. They test-fired cruise missiles the other day. That's got to mean something.
Absolutely.
What's going on with all these countries? How are they seeing the United States now in this complete mess of an administration? I mean, they're all going to do different things, obviously, but you know, important countries in the region that are looking at China, that some are aligned with China, say North Korea, some are aligned against China, say Japan and South Korea. How are they looking at things?
Right, let's deal with the North Korean cruise missile thing, because that's important. And let's understand the implications of it. This is a cruise missile which the North Koreans say, and the South Koreans have confirmed, has a range of 1,500 kilometres. Now, in order for a cruise missile to operate over those sort of distances, the most reliable way to do it, if it's going to have any kind of accuracy, is for it to be able to position itself using data from satellites. North Korea has practically no satellites. So where is it getting that data from? The most plausible explanation is that it's working with China. Now, the Chinese and the North Koreans had very tense relations until a few years ago, but over the last few years, they've patched things up. Kim Jong-un and Xi Jinping have met several times, and they seem to be, at the moment, the best of friends. And the Chinese are not criticising this North Korean cruise missile test. So it seems to me that here we see North Korea being used by the Chinese as a kind of cat's paw, extending the reach of the military, not just to South Korea, but also potentially to Japan as well. So we could see how the game is being played. You talked about China making big moves. To me, this looks like one. Now, you know, I understand there's going to be people who will disagree, but that's how it looks to me. I don't believe that North Korea would have been able to develop this kind of cruise missile technology or demonstrate it in this way without some kind of input and without getting some kind of green light from Beijing. Anyway, that's that. Now, South Korea is also getting all these mixed signals from Washington. And it's also unsure about what's going to happen. And it must be extremely worried that if there's a military confrontation which the United States slides into in the South China Sea or the Taiwan Strait, and which it doesn't look prepared for, and with the president clearly very half-hearted or, in fact, afraid of it, then South Korea is going to say to itself, well, in that kind of situation, with Kim Jong-un also making moves, with the military power of North Korea getting ever stronger, what are we going to do? Well, the most logical thing for us to do, if we no longer trust the United States, is to do a deal with the other side. China is already our biggest trading partner. We already have contacts now with North Korea. It's known that the North Korean and South Korean presidents regularly correspond with each other. So it's entirely possible that we could see the South Koreans suddenly saying, well, look, we are not interested in what the US wants. We don't rely anymore on the US shield. We want the American troops to go, and we will do our deal with North Korea, and we will do our deal with China, because ultimately we rely on whatever guarantees China gives us as being much more secure for us and for our future than the guarantees that are provided to us by the United States. And the same ultimately applies to Japan. Now, Japan has a long history of conflict with China. At the moment, there's massive mistrust of China in Japan. But ultimately, Japan's power relative to China's is declining. There was an article recently, which said that Japan's position relative to China is roughly the same as Taiwan's was relative to China 20 years ago. So that gives you an idea of how much weaker Japan has become. So the Japanese, faced by this rise of China, this weakening of the US, are going to have to make a decision. Do they forge closer links with China? Do they distance themselves from the United States? Do they seek a rapprochement with Beijing? That's possible. The other possibility, which would also be very difficult for the United States, is does Japan go nuclear? Does it decide, as it is perfectly capable of doing, of developing its own nuclear weapons capability in defiance of the United States, which doesn't want Japan developing nuclear weapons, in defiance of Beijing too? But that would mean Japan severing, in effect, its connection with the United States, no longer relying on the United States in the way that it did, becoming an independent military power again. So the Japanese are close to being put in the position where they have to make that choice. They're approaching that fork in the road because, again, the message from Washington is so uncertain.
That would be a huge development. Real quick, let me ask you a question.
But one that I should stress is actively discussed in Japan. I mean, there are far more opponents than supporters, but you know that could change.
No, the Japanese have to look out for their best interests.
Absolutely.
Things have changed since Biden was put in office.
Absolutely,
drastically. Things have changed. Let me ask you something that may not be so, well, I think it is actually geopolitically focused. There's a lot of talk about how China is managing things on a social level. And what do I mean? Let me put an example. Applications which are Chinese owned, like TikTok, Hollywood, which caters to the Chinese and it takes a lot of Chinese money, are institutions in the United States that have done their very best to promote very progressive, for lack of a better word, very progressive, non-traditional, non-family, non-Christian, all these things, values to the United States. They've tried to change the U.S. The U.S. is foundation. And a lot of this soft power is influenced by China. My question is, on the flip side, we've gotten in the past week a lot of reports out of China that they're going in the opposite direction. In other words, they're now promoting masculinity. They're promoting their military and service in the military. They're actually giving out, I don't know if it's tax credits or money to families that have three or more children or two or more children. They're promoting marriage. They're promoting what seems to be a very conservative, traditional type of policy. What does this tell you about how China is viewing things? On the one hand, it seems like they're kind of pushing, they're helping push the U.S. as a society towards a very new model that we've never seen in the history of the world, a model that I believe is a recipe for a disaster, but it's being played out. But they're moving towards a different direction, maybe a longer-term play where they're saying, you know what? We're going to build up our young. Actually, they're banning video games, Alexander, there, or the amount of time spent playing video games for children. They're making video game developers submit their games to make sure they promote the government and they promote Chinese values. It seems like China is going in a completely different direction in anticipation for what's about to happen in the West. I don't know. Do you understand my question?
Absolutely.
What does this tell you about China's purposefulness.
Absolutely. Let's first of all deal with the point about, you know, the fact that the Chinese have to some extent promoted all these changes that we've been talking about, these radical new ideas in the United States, and especially in the United States and via Hollywood and all the rest. Well, it's absolutely obvious now that that's for export only. because the Chinese clearly see these sort of things as weakening the fabric of a society, and they want to see the United States weakened in that respect. And of course, they're doing the opposite in their own country, because they see that they have decided that doing the opposite, going back to more conservative policies, strengthens their society. Now, you know, I read the Chinese media quite extensively. I'm talking about now, of course, obviously, always the English language media. But if you read the Chinese media, all of this is talked about strengthening society within China. So all of they've decided that, you know, taking a more conservative approach is good for society, for their society. It makes their society stronger. It makes it more resilient. It makes their armed forces stronger and in a position to, you know, assert China's interests and China's influence more effectively. And of course, by the way, there is also an ideological attraction, because no doubt the Chinese sense that this more conservative turn is more attractive to other Asian societies and perhaps Central Asian societies, which China wants to win over. So they're preparing, they're moving forward, they are shaping their society for the confrontation with the United States that they see is to come, and perhaps also for the future when they assume, partly as a result of these changes, that they will be the world's leading power. They want a strong army. They want strong and active young men in that army. They want more of those young men so that they, you know, can serve in their army, that they can strengthen their economy. They want a more resilient and stable society in general, one based on families. And they look at the United States, they see the opposite, and they see a society that is, as far as they're concerned, weakening. And of course, they see no reason why they shouldn't help this process along.
Seems like, yeah, long term. It seems like they're playing it long term.
Of course they do. I mean, that's, you know, we're talking about the world's oldest state. Never forget this. China has a history that goes back something like 5,000 years. And that's not an exaggeration. I mean, you can trace the long, you know, history of Chinese dynasties going all the way back. And they've got a massive literature about statecraft and planning. You know, the Sun Tzu, or whatever his name was, the military person that people always talk about. He's only one Chinese writer among myriads who've written about these sort of things. So the Chinese understand statecraft like practically no one else. And they're able to plan long term. Because, you know, for them, you know, 5 years, 10 years is just a twinkling of the eye, basically. By contrast, the United States and Western societies, especially the United States, you know, for them, an electoral cycle is an all-absorbing matter. It is an age. And that's the fundamental difference. The Chinese plan far ahead. The United States is always, at least at the moment, it's overwhelmingly focused on the political struggle in Washington and on positioning there and all that sort of thing. So the Chinese are absolutely planning ahead, and that's what they do.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave it there. What a big mistake. Big mistake for Biden to start focusing on these mandates and these passports. And so much other stuff, really existential stuff, is happening, but they're focusing on this domestic threat, well, it seems, you know.
Well, again, I mean, in a way, I mean, they are focusing on that. They're focusing on other things, because unlike the Chinese, who want to unite their society and who are taking steps to do that, because this is what we see, the United States is acting to divide its society. And I'm going to be very careful with what we're saying, but I mean, you already see some officials in the administration, including parts of the military, talking about the threat from within. Well, how does that help you?
George Bush's speech the other day for 9/11.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So how does that help you? When you're up against an adversary like China, you've got to, you know, mobilize all your resources, all your abilities, all your ideas, because, you know, they are going to... That is a full spectrum challenge in a way that the challenge from the Soviet Union never was.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave it there. The Duran.locals.com. Please join us on the Duran.locals.com and get all kinds of great content that we're putting up there and that our community members are also putting up there and sharing. And go to Super U, Rumble, BitChute, and Odyssey to get all our videos there. And the Duran shop. You'll find the link down below. 10% real news is the code to get that coupon discount. And Alexander is wearing his Union Jack t-shirt. And I think you have a Union Jack mug.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. You can find all the information down below. Take care, everybody.